Heyo, welcome to Built to Be You. My name is Michaela and I am so pumped that you're here. I made this podcast so you can uncover what it means to be you and learn how you can fully step into your potential while trying to navigate your 20s, overcoming previous failures, learning to face your fears, dance with your emotions, and take messy action in order to build and become the best you. You can expect a little bit of mixed up love and a whole lot of real talk. But let me just say, this journey is so much more fun with a bestie. So buckle up and let's do it together. Welcome, Ashley, to the Built to Be You podcast. I feel like this is a long overdue, highly anticipated since our retreat this fall kind of conversation. So I'm stoked to have you here, your energy, your passion, all the things. So why don't you go ahead and tell us, who is Ashley in a nutshell?
I love that we were just talking about how I'm really bad at this part. We're going to lead right in with it.
You're welcome.
My name's Ashley Durant. I am a board certified health and wellness nurse coach, sort of. I am half board certified holistic nurse, half board nurse coach. I was a previous ER nurse and also cardiovascular step down and a mom of two girls. I run my own business. I teach other nurses going through collective. I'm kind of like a life coach that's holistic for entrepreneur women who are in leadership, really just pushing the envelope, whether it's generational healing, whether it's healing from invisible illness or being neurodivergent in a world that wasn't made for us or nurse coaches in business, anyone who's on the edge of their industry, I really love to support to keep that going because as we know, it's a long haul and not a quick sprint. So I like to really be the marathon run support for what that is in their lives.
I love that. And one thing, so at the retreat was the first time that I obviously met you like in real life. And I just love how you're like, no bullshit, like how you feel is like how you feel. And you're not going to sugarcoat it for anybody. And you're also not going to accept like, no as an answer or like, it just is what it is. So you're like, yep, you bet. So let's just like backpedal a little bit to BB Nurse Ashley. What did she love? What was she excited about in nursing versus what are you doing now and how is it different?
So, I mean, the signs were there, right? Like I didn't know I had ADHD when I was a baby nurse, but then I gravitated towards the ER. So like the signs were always there. And I would say what got me excited was honestly, this is almost a little embarrassing to admit. I took care of my grandmother when I was super young and I took care of her while she was passing away and, you know, a lot of childhood trauma there. But they breed us to be caretakers, right? Like I feel like a lot of nurses were just, we have something that happened in our past. So we really have an inkling for caretaking. Then we fall right into it. And I really did it because I just knew it'd be a good job. And I actually was so scared of blood. I passed out all the time. And then I went and I'm like, this is fun. I'm such a nerd. I love learning about the body and like just the way, like when you people don't sit in awe about the million ways that your body keeps you alive on just a day-to-day basis, cannot relate. Like we have so many things going on just to keep us upright. And it fascinated me. So I was all in. As soon as I went to like A&P and microbiology, I didn't do great, but like I was all in and having so much fun and then being able to caretake for people through literal birth to death. I mean, there's just nothing greater than being able to hold space for people in such vulnerable moments. It was such an honor to me and such a natural gift that I had and had no clue. And so that was back then. And I worked my butt off. I was there for whatever they needed. I was a resource nurse. I was training people. I was just always all in. And then I had a really deep level burnout, completely switched gears, found the Nurse Coach Collective. I know that's something me and you share, that we found the Nurse Coach Collective and went in. And now I use my business as a board certified nurse coach to push the needle in my healing, to allow me to slow down and not live hypervigilant like I was as a nurse prior to.
I love that. Very different. Yeah. Very, very different. Very different like brains, but also not because like the transferable skills, like I think a lot of times entrepreneurship for nurses feels so far out of reach because we're not using those skills in the day to day, but also you are. And
all the time, we're innovators.
Yeah. And like you're communicators and you're collaborators and like you're all these different things. And it's like, that's really entrepreneurship, like in a nutshell. And
I
think
sometimes.
Yeah. And it's like, also, we talked about this a lot at the retreat too. Like
I just feel like nurses, we lose so much creativity in the policies and the procedures and the evidence-based practice. And so it's like, how do you break out of that narrative or out of that paradigm and into building something that truly is for you? So what did that like pivot look like?
Woo. That's a loaded question. So when I was in the ER, I had my first daughter and it was super traumatic. Not necessarily the birth itself, but the after. I got so ill. I postpartum hemorrhaged over half of my blood and they didn't replace it because they're like, she's young, she'll be fine. Spoiler alert, was not fine. And then I ended up getting super sick about a year later. I almost died a couple times because no one could figure out what was wrong. That's what spearheaded the transformation for me. That was like my line in the sand of, I remember, it was like the guy, I still thank him. I went into the ER so sick. I knew I was in adrenal insufficiency. And he looked at me and he goes, you're going to have to convince me you're sick. You're going to have to convince me because you don't look sick enough for me. And this was my medical director. So like my biggest boss, he was like the Bowser of where I worked. And it pissed me off. So much. My husband was like, I'm about to come over the table. Not really. He's like second to Jesus in patience. But then I was so exhausted because I was truly dying that we didn't catch it. He didn't listen to me. He didn't order the labs I said to order. And if my endocrinologist didn't call me the next day, I don't know if I'd be here. And that really just sort of put the nail in the head. And I was like, I'm done. I can't be a part of a system that is harming not only the patients, but the people who are there to take care of them. We're a team and completely abandoned me there, like right on the ER table, right? And so I knew I wanted something different. I knew there was more to it. And that was a message that was playing to me since early on in my nursing career, but I didn't listen. And you know, when you don't listen, the message gets louder. And I quit. Before I had a plan, I didn't think I was going to be an entrepreneur. I just went through the training to be a nurse coach and get board certified. And it was just, I'm an accidental entrepreneur. I was like, I don't know what I'm doing, but I will burn it down for people not to feel like I did in that moment. And that was all she wrote.
That was all she wrote.
5.5 years ago. So
dang,
big transition.
That's such a beautiful story. And I think that too, like a lot of times that's how entrepreneurs like are born, is like, there's this problem and I'm no longer putting up with it and putting a bandaid over it. And I'm going to do something about it. And, you know, as nurses, we have this innate ability to anticipate needs and change, but we have to execute on the action on the other side of that, of like, what does that actually look like? And whether that's, you know, you integrate it into your practice at the bedside or wherever you work, or you go and burn it down and create something completely on your own, there's no right or wrong way. But I think it's these innate traits that we don't utilize enough. And I think that that story is such a beautiful example of like, fuck this.
Yeah.
I'm going in.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like, you know, obviously you were like one of the first cohorts of the Nurse Coach Collective, right?
Elective 4. I mean, they were babies. We had like maybe 20 some people in our classes. So very early on, it was a fresh idea.
Yeah. And so it's like the amount of change makers that have come out of that program is like insane. And yes. I think a lot of times it's like, oh, I'm this mindset of I'm just one person, or one person isn't enough to create change. So for the woman who's kind of thinking that, like, I'm not enough as I am, like I'm just one person, what would you tell her to kind of like light a fire under her?
Oh, I'd say, come talk to me. I feel like too, I have this very interesting perspective, and like part of my voice, I'm sick for the first time in like 10 years, but it's fine. But when I got to see the Nurse Coach Collective, which is a place for change makers thrive since early on to now. So I was there in the beginning. I graduated. There wasn't a lot of people out here. They weren't like doing business. They weren't doing that. So when I graduated, I went out and I said, I'm just going to do this. I have no idea what the hell I'm doing, but I care so much. That's it. It was just, I care so much. And there's no one else in the world I would rather take on change making to make the world a better place than a nurse. That nurse who knows, there's no surprise we're the most trusted profession when it comes to press gamey, however many years in a row we've done that. If there's anyone, I want nurses at the bedside. I want nurses at the political level. I want nurses in homes. I want nurses everywhere changing the world, because there's so much more people doing that already than we think. So mm-hmm. I'm like, come my way. Let me show you. Let me just take you to a few friends. Let me take you to Michaela. Like, let me take you to these people who are already doing it. So you realize you're not alone and you're not the weirdo. We're out here. It's just connecting with the right people at the right time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I think too, part of that is like the consumption of social media, because like, you know, yes. the tricky little algorithm, it pushes at you what you spend time consuming. So like, if you're consuming the content of all the burnt out nurses who are miserable and not doing anything to create change and just like, woe is me, then yes. like, that's what the algorithm's going to keep pushing at you. So you have to be mindful of the consumption and the connections of like being around people who look like the direction you're headed. And I think yes. sometimes we, even for me now, like sometimes I'm like, man, like, are all nurses just crushing it? Like doing life the way that they're supposed to. And I'm like, wait, I've trained this algorithm.
It's like the saddest echo chamber, right? Like when you go down that road, it's the saddest echo chamber. So I talk a lot about mindful consumption for innovators, right? Because the thing is, we have to manage our energy. And part of it is what we're putting out comes back, and not mm-hmm. in an energetic way. In a technological algorithm way, it's just as important. So I love that you mentioned that.
Yeah, no. So, okay. I want to like switch gears here a little bit, because this is why I originally wanted to bring on the podcast, just to talk about like neurodivergent life, ADHD. What is it? How did you know that you have it? Because I think so many people are living with it and don't actually know. And a lot of times it comes off as a weakness, or like, I'm broken, or I just can't function the way everybody else does. So give us everything you got.
Girl, so I know when we talked about scheduling this, you asked me, hey, do you want to talk about ADHD? And I'm like, oh, like how I figured out at 30, my whole life was a lie. I was like, oh, I'm not broken. The thing was, what got me here, and I find this with a lot of women in the millennial age, is they didn't know what ADHD looked like in little girls. That our hyperactivity lived in our minds, while boys' hyperactivity lived on the outside. And so they couldn't see it. And so we got punished at an astronomical amount of times more than boys were just boys. We had to sit and be a certain way, just the way we socialized girls back then. We've come a long way, but in the 80s, that just wasn't really it. 80s, 90s. Let's not age myself. And so I was filling out paperwork for my friend's son, who was getting evaluated for ADHD. And so I'm like filling it out, and I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh shit. I know I'm doing this paperwork for, you know, this chosen nephew of mine, but next thing I know, I'm like, oh wait, that's me. And my whole world completely changed. And then I went to look it up for my daughter. Bless her heart. She also has neurodivergency of some form. And again, looking at all the information, and I'm just sitting there like, oh my gosh, the call is coming from the room. Like, it's me. It's me. And it blew my mind to be like, how long did everyone know? Was it just me? Like, was anyone going to tell me? Or... And I find this happening with so many moms, because we find a way to accommodate ourselves our whole lives. And the next thing we know, we have kids and they're in our space. They disrupt our systems that we've made to accommodate ourselves that not a lot of people know about. And next thing we know, we're losing our minds and we think we're broken. We think it's us, it's our career, or we're moms and we can't hack it. And really, it's just we have neurodivergency and haven't learned how to accommodate that we live in a world that wasn't made for our brains.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not us.
I love that. Can you like define neurodivergency for the person who maybe doesn't know?
Oh, yes. So neurodivergency is a term that it's an umbrella term used for anything that your brain is diverging from the norm. That makes me giggle. Like, what is normal anyway? But so it could also be autism, ADHD, or PTSD is considered neurodivergency. So our brains are shaped different. So I also have PTSD. I share this pretty openly. And so basically the emotional wound of something I experienced when I was younger changed the shape of my brain. So my amygdala is bigger, which is your fight or flight center. So you go into like nervous system dysregulation, easier, things like that. And so any condition that's not considered mental illness, I say with air quotes, since people probably won't be able to see that, is consider neurodivergency. So diverging from the norm, but not being pathological in nature.
I really appreciate the like explanation of like your amygdala being a different size and like it's truly like a different brain shape, because I think a lot of times we don't understand like the physiology or what's happening on the inside that you can't see, that's not like tangible. And I know one thing that you posted the other day on Instagram or somewhere was like, I make the intangible tangible. And I was like, I love that.
Yes, because I started with autoimmune disease, right? Like that's where my like healing journey start and no one could see it. And that's exactly what that doctor said. You have to show me. And I'm like, I can't show you that my organs are fighting themselves. Like, how am I supposed to show you that? Right. And so the more that I unpacked, the more I was like, oh my gosh, there's so many things that make me different. Mm-hmm. And now that I understand it, my life is like, oh, this is how everybody just lives. They live in a state of just like, again, normalcy, I use loosely, but just normalcy all day. They don't like fight themselves and all this. And then I'm like, oh, you're sensitive. You have, you know, neurodivergency and you have autoimmune disease and all these things. And so I'm so fiery about making the intangible tangible because people don't see it and they treat people inequitous, whatever. They don't treat them kindly and it pisses me off. So that's really what got me here was seeing how people treat the people that they can't see the problems with.
Yeah. Well, and how we treat ourselves too, right? Like you were saying, like you were like beating yourself up and being like, am I broken? Am I the problem? So what were some of like the big lights? I was going to say red flags, but that's, I don't like that word. What were some like the big like light bulbs? Like, wow, neurodivergency, Ashley, like pay attention to me. Maybe for the woman who's listening, who she's like, I don't know, maybe.
Oh, the thing that got me is there's different kinds of it. Right. So there's 7 types of ADD. And you're going to giggle at me. I brought my book, the Healing ADD book, Daniel Amen. So he makes a clinic and it's very rooted in functional medicine. So it's a lot of diet. It's a lot of, they do something called a SPECT scan. And what they do is they scan your brain and they show high functioning areas and low functioning areas to diagnose your type of ADHD. It's only ADHD now, not ADD technically. So he does this scan and then you really understand how your brain works. So there's an anxious loop ADHD where you're just like looping and looping thoughts. And I'm like, wait, people don't do that. And the first light, if we have to go way back when I was in the collective and I did mindfulness, the first time in my entire life, my brain was completely silent was when I did a mindfulness practice in the Nurse Coach Collective. And I was like, oh my God.
Whoa, like, this is what happens.
Like, this is crazy. I'm like, and so I had a moment where I'm looking at everyone else and I'm like, wait, this wasn't that profound for you. Like it was almost, I'm like, huh. Funny story. I just had nothing go on in my brain for the first time in my entire life. And then that's when it started slowly unraveling from there.
I can relate to that so hard.
I was like, oh, wait, do people get breaks? Then I started asking, I'm like, do you have thoughts all the time? And they're like, no. So I'm like, when I ask you, what are you thinking? And you say nothing, that's true. And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, I'm literally over here having an existential crisis because I experienced silence for the first time in my whole life. So that was the biggest one. And then the more I learned, the more that the different signs looked and how I learned that women's looks completely different and we do it in our brain. And learning that I'm anxious because I'm forgetful and inattentive versus I'm anxious first was huge because when I was able to separate the two through mindfulness and through sitting with my feelings, I'm like, wait, I'm anxious because I forget everything, not because I'm anxious. So they were treating, I didn't get it treated, but if they would have treated me for anxiety, they've been missing the point the whole time. Mm-hmm. I'm not anxious. I'm anxious because I have ADHD.
Right. And how often do you feel like, you know, that probably does go mistreated or like misdiagnosed, which is why we do the work that we do, right?
Oh, yeah. Nothing gets me more fired up than
to shine the light on the places that other people aren't willing to. But asking for a friend, how did you quit forgetting things?
Oh, bless. I still do. I told you right before I came here, it's eclipse time where I'm at. And I got glasses yesterday when everyone was sold out. I don't keep forgetting or stop forgetting. I just write things down a whole lot. And I ask my daughters now that they're old enough to help me remember. But the key for me, and this is a lot of ADHDers, is I need visual cues. So people come into my house. I hate visual clutter, right? Hate it. But like, if I have to remember to take my supplements, I have to leave them out. I have to leave them out and then like move them to a new place to know that I've taken them and then move them back at the end of the day. It's like almost ridiculous. I need charts. I need sticky notes. I need everything. It's like, I need to take my brain out of my head and put it in front of me, or I will never remember anything. Sheer survival mode. I did great in school and then burn out as a mother. And that's how we've learned to accommodate.
Wait, I just had a moment. So literally,
tell me.
When I feed Lucy, my dog, I cannot remember if I fed her or not. So like, I have to put the scoop on top of the bin because that's how I know that I fed her. Like there, the number of times that homegirl gets to eat twice in one morning or twice in one evening is unreal.
She is so lucky to have you.
It's a strength, you know?
Yes. And it's one of those things where until someone else said like, yeah, you don't have ADHD until you like look at your systems. What have you built to accommodate yourself? And I was like, oh, so like the socks and shoes that I have by my door for my kids, because we're going to forget socks and shoes and we don't have them right by the door. Oh, that's ADD too. Is everything ADD? Having just one of those moments where I really step back and look and I'm like, oh, you do the most to do what most people do without thinking. Someone explained it in a way of people have routines, right? And routines for people who are neurotypical, they don't think about them. They just wake up and brush their teeth. I have to think to brush my teeth. It's not like a choice. You know, it's not like something I can automate. I can't automate anything because everything I have to think about to do. And that is the biggest difference is we have so many neurons synapsing all the time. And there's more in ADHD brains than regular brains that everything is a choice. So the decision fatigue that happens for people with ADHD is so much more than people who don't, because they can automate things in their brain and we don't have that.
Yeah. And I think too, sometimes with ADHD or really any diagnosis, if you will, like how did you detach that from like being your whole identity? Because I think sometimes we get this label and it's like we make it mean so much about like who we are as a person. So let's jam on that for a second.
Oh, yes. Because I think too, what helped me was having chronic illness first. And getting well from that of I reversed my autoimmune disease and they told me I couldn't because again, I'm just someone you can't tell no to. And ever since I did that, I'm like, wait, I have so much power. Like there's so much I can do here. And so when I figured out ADHD, it was freeing for me. It was like, wait a minute, there's a reason. So now I don't have to beat myself up. It was almost better to have the label for me than it wasn't because then I'm like, oh, my brain's just different. It's not broken. It's not bad. So I'm going to love myself and learn about it and learn how I can work with it versus against it. Like I've been doing for 30 years before I understood what was going on. So for me, it was even more freeing to have the label because then I knew it's not me. I'm not ADHD. I have ADHD. That's a completely different way to exist in the world. And then when I learned about it and I realized these things that make me who I am, the innovator, the change agent, the person who has such high justice for like equality for everyone, all of those things are because of my ADHD. I wouldn't be an entrepreneur. I probably wouldn't do any of those things because I didn't have that like delusional belief in myself that comes with the ADHD. So the more I learned and the more I realized just how cool it actually is, I was able to really not look at it like a negativity, not look at it like it's a piece of me that's broken, but rather something I really want to embrace. I want to help other women do the same and kids.
Yeah. I love that. And you know, no matter what it is, it's like, once you learn to embrace all parts of you rather than like picking and choosing, like I accept this, but like, nope, don't agree with that. It's like, you just get to show up more powerfully in the world as a fully expressed version of yourself. And like that in that power and that authenticity and just like that place of authority, the energy is so palpable and unmatched. It's like we spend our whole lives trying to fit into the molds or into the containers or, you know, like the round hole and the square hole, whatever that analogy is. it's exhausting. So it's like, I love that you have been able to just accept it for what it is and then ask yourself, like, how can I use this to, you know, encourage more people, inspire people to like learn more about myself. And once you're connected deeper with yourself, then it's like, that ripples nothing over into your practice.
And like nothing can stop you, right? It's like no one can make fun of you and hurt you if you're already doing it to yourself, right? Or you do make fun of me because I forget things. I know this is like par for the course. So
this
it's
is me.
Like, right. Like I love it. I'm chaotic. I'm super impulsive. Like I'm so fun to be around. I don't need a drink. I don't need nothing. Like I'm just a party as I am. But for so long, I masked it, right? Like I put that mask on to be the like good girl, the quiet girl, all the things that society told me to be. Mm-hmm. And so when I started the work of unmasking from that, really learning who I was, I have fallen in love with myself in a way I didn't know possible. And like you said, accepting all those parts, because there's so much shame for my childhood because I didn't know what I had. And I'm like, everyone else got it together. Why don't you? Right? Like all that negative chatter that is now since gone, because I went back to that little version of me and loved her through that. And I said, girl, it's not your fault. You have ADHD and no one saw. Like, I'm so sorry. The adults suck. And so does the research. That's not your fault, babe. Like, let's go. And I like brought this like little version of me with me and this teen version of me who was like super spicy. And I was like, come on, I've got you now. And we're going to move forward. We're going to live our best life to make up for that. So like also having my kids is like super fun, because now I get to say F the rules in so many fun ways with them, just mm-hmm. out of sheer spite to relive, not through them, but with them, the fun that should have been my life, and understanding that there's a lot more freedom to be had there.
Yeah, I think that's so powerful to be able, and I know that you are really well versed on this, like being able to go back and like unpack what happened in like the smaller child version of you and how it impacts the way that you show up now and the way that you think now and all of those different things. And I think, again, that acceptance is so, so powerful and will move you in ways that you didn't even know. And it also impacts future generations. Like imagine if you just kept like suppressing all these feelings of like, I'm broken and I have ADHD, like how that would impact their energy and the way that they're like raised. So it's generational work. And I know that that's like your jam.
It's my jam. And what I love too is doing generational work with people. It's like, I've seen it heal my kids, but like Michaela, I've seen it heal the people above me. So mm-hmm. my parents, it comes from them. And so they were even like, my dad, I'm going to blast him. Glad he doesn't really listen to what I do. He was like, oh my God, I have ADHD. And I'm like, yeah, you uh-huh. do. So now he's able to see and interact with the world in a way that's more accommodating to himself. I've seen his negative self-talk go down. I've seen the pressure he puts on himself from societal norms go down. And once I saw that, not only does it affect my legacy, right, but it affects the people I'm healing, the generations that come before me, I was like, I will die on the hill of this work. So I went from invisible illness to generational healing to now, let's bring this all together with like nurses in business, because I really want you to stay in business, because there's no one who should be in the world. So again, I use my ADHD in my business, and I've changed my niche like 7 times. It's just so much fun. It's like every day is a new adventure. And because I've set up myself to have freedom, I get to chase all of my like hyper-focus rabbit holes down. And it is so much fun.
My hyper-focus rabbit holes. I'm calculating. Yeah. Wow. That is like, wow. You need to like coin that. That is, yes. Accurate.
But I think about the doing in a year's time. I mean, your guess is as good as mine.
I think about the one who's listening, who's like, okay, yeah, I probably fit the piece here. Like, but there's so much, you know, even if you think about like Enneagram or human design or chronic illness, like there's just so much media to learn, like how to tailor it to your life. So if you had to give just like a couple of tangible, maybe simpler steps to start unpacking and creating habits and routines and narratives that support the neurodivergent life, what would that be?
It's so silly, but TikTok, this is like the silliest thing, but I learned all the clinical things and ways to learn about ADD. But until I looked at women, at this point, diagnosis is more of a formality. People who generally think they have it almost always have it. And there's tests you can take, all of that. But if you're of a space where like, I definitely have it, but I'm not interested in getting treated or diagnosing it, truly me going to TikTok and finding other women's lived experiences with ADHD as late diagnosis people has changed my world. Like we know, being around like-minded people really sets you free of like, oh, I'm not alone out here. And then they share their wins and they share their quips and they share what's worked for them. And it's so silly how an app, something so small that brings so much community. And I love TikTok for that, for bringing things into our world where we can really integrated. It's small, it's bite-sized. It's all the things you need to just be like, that's one more thing I don't have to think about because I think that's going to work for me. The reality is it's not going to work in a month anyway. So it's like, it's always changing, always going, and it's bite-sized, it's doable. And it's coming from someone who genuinely cares and is sharing their lived experiences without bypassing, which unfortunately a lot of healthcare workers and other places do unintentionally.
Right. And I'm curious too, with like the social media aspect of it, like, do you feel like most of the information you have found has been like reputable, but also like, it doesn't have to be like, you know, like yeah. not everything has to be like science evidence back, but I'm just curious, like, do you feel as if there's like, you know, factual stuff to it? Cause sometimes people on social media can just like blow smoke out their ass.
A million freaking percent. There are reputable people, and there's a few and far between. Again, being the nurse in me, I can't turn it off, but there's a book too. So if we want to switch to a little bit more reputable, a book that I really love is called A Radical Guide for Women with ADHD. And it's by Sari Solder and Michelle Frank. Solden, I might have ruined the names, but they have a PhD and an MS. Both of them are studied in it and they have it. And so I listened to this book on Audible and I'm like 2 seconds in and I'm bawling, feeling the most seen I've ever seen in my life. That's what really got me started of like, okay, now I know lived experience plus education, right? Plus the scientific background. And that's why I like to live in this world too. I marry the both. So that is probably my favorite way too, is to intro in is that radical guide to women with ADHD, because it looks completely different than men. And so everything we know is based off of that model. And as we know, women are just so much more bio-individual than men. So we need new studies and new things supporting us. And that's the best resource I've seen as far as reputable plus lived experience, because I feel like you need a little bit of both.
Yeah, for sure. But I also think like the lived experience, like there's so much power in having a space to be like, me too. Like it just makes you feel not so alone, not so isolated, not so crazy some type of way. Like you were feeling like not everybody feels this way with thoughts all of the time. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I can relate. And I'm sure so many other women can too. And it's just like, it's that connection to self. And it's very easy to run on autopilot and go through the day to day, go to the 12-hour shift, clock out, repeat, you know, and then wonder why, like, you're feeling so disconnected from your work or from your family or relationships. And it's like, there's nothing that trumps that connection to self. And you're okay if you can't sit down and meditate for 20 minutes like Sally on Instagram. Because I sure can't.
I still can't. I know maybe meditation like changed my life, but I can't do it because I need to be moving. Like I can't sit and meditate. So yes.
Walking meditations totally are my bread and butter. I love those.
Same. Like if I'm not moving, it's not happening. It's just not going to happen. So we've got to, again, accommodate by stop pretending like we're not anxious, movie little things and just get up and walk a little. It's fine.
What's so funny because I'm always like, today's the day, like I'm gonna sit down and meditate. And then like this morning I was like, Monday, feeling fresh, like let's sit down and meditate. And then like the lawnmowers are going off and people are cleaning, and then I'm like, I'm good, I'm done. Like I think it's just such an expectation management thing. Like quit trying to asshole yourself way into a corner when like you don't belong there.
It's so true. I tell everyone, I'm like, you know what? What's kind of great about almost dying? It's so dramatic. My bar's on the ground. Like that, if that's like how I entered into motherhood, like it doesn't get much worse than that. So like it's kind of great to live every day. Like that being the expectation, I'm like, as long as that's not happening, it's a pretty great day in the neighborhood over here. So I love it because it also allows me that freedom to just embrace and accept and do the things that other people do find harder, just because that was a big chemically, like physically shifting thing in my body. So that plus ADHD, but we won't give that credit for everything.
Oh my goodness. I feel like we could sit here and talk about this forever and ever. And I love using humans so much. I literally, when I met you at the retreat, I was like, yes.
My people.
My people. My Same. People. But Ashley, where can we connect with you after this podcast is over? Tell us all the things.
Ooh, okay. So you can find me, my website, which is not updated because I have ADHD, is www.deeplyrootedwellnessllc.com. On Instagram, I am deeply.rooted.wellness, and you can find me on my name on Facebook. It's Ashley Durant, RN. I'm everywhere. I'm everywhere and nowhere all at the same time. But like, don't expect it to be updated because
I thought that works around here.
Right. I'm like, look, we embrace it here. We don't pretend it's not there. So you can find me and I'll be there, but who knows when the last time was.
Oh my goodness. I love that. I will put all that down in the show notes. And thank you for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me, Michaela.
Before you go, I just wanted to let you know that I am so dang grateful that we are now on this journey through uncovering what it means to be you together. If you love this episode, make sure you share it with your friend, or better yet, share it on social media and tag me so that way I know. Until next time, chat soon.